the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The International Planned Parenthood Federation is out with a report you're going to want to know about. It is calling for mandatory, comprehensive sex education for all children and young adults ages 10 and up. And in this concept of comprehensive and intensive sex education that will be mandatory for all children internationally, they are calling for, again, what is called comprehensive sex education, and that is a very loaded term that means education not only in the facts of life, physiology, anatomy, biology, reproduction, it's also about sex, including explicitly in this report teaching 10-year-olds and above to older ages that that sex is pleasurable and how it can be made more pleasurable. Fascinating stuff in here. Fascinating is not actually the word, though. It's more ominous and frightening. And we're talking here about one of those non-governmental organizations you hear about, NGOs, that has enormous influence in the political process, especially in the international arena. And that is exactly where this particular report is addressed, is to the international arena, to groups like the United Nations, groups that put together what amount to binding agreements between these nations. And the real danger is that many American parents be unaware that this is the kind of policy proposal that is being talked about, not in their local school district, not at their state capital, not even in Washington, D.C., but in places like Geneva and London and Brussels, where sight unseen to American parents and citizens, many of the decisions are made that our government obligates us to by international agreement. Now, this is the kind of news development, and I'm going to be telling you in the next segment about what is in this report and why I should have your concern. This is the kind of report that should have the attention of Christian parents. My intention is not to scare, but rather to educate and to allow us an opportunity to frame an argument about the kind of sex education that we think is right and necessary, and the kind of sex education that we think is wrong and would violate the rights of parents, and we believe the rights of children. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be putting up by Twitter feed and by also our website information on this particular report. It's made available. They haven't hidden this. They have released it to the public in many languages. I'm holding the English language edition of the report entitled Stand and Deliver, Sex, Health, and Young People in the 21st Century. I'm holding it right here in my hands. I've had an opportunity to read every single word of it, and it pulls no punches. Even though it uses the bureaucratic language of the international diplomatic community, It's NGO speak. Nonetheless, it's clear enough and plain enough that this is a plan for comprehensive sex education to be made mandatory for all children in all nations ages 10 and up. We'll be talking about this in detail in just a moment. First, review some other issues in the news. Until Sunday, the top-ranked television program in history in terms of the number of viewers was the final episode of MASH that aired on February the 28th, 1983. So you're talking about a 27-year record there, broken only Sunday by the Super Bowl. And that particular Super Bowl, well, as you know, won by the New Orleans Saints, had a record number of viewers that amounts to at least 106.5 million people. Now, by a conservative estimate, that's one out of every three Americans. And you consider how busy Americans are, all the kinds of things Americans are involved in. The fact that at least one out of three of every Americans was in front of a television set watching this Super Bowl game is nothing less than amazing. There are several reasons that are given as to why it might be that this particular broadcast of the Super Bowl garnered such a large market share. A part of it was undoubtedly the romance of the New Orleans Saints, and an awful lot of Americans, it turns out, were pulling for the Saints, not so much because of any football affiliation, but because they were pulling for the city of New Orleans. And it's a great thing for the city of New Orleans that the Saints have won, giving that city a real encouragement post-Katrina and a sense of something to celebrate that really is a comeback worth noting. But also of discussion, of course, during the Super Bowl was the focus on the family ad with Pam and Tim Tebow. And USA Today is reporting that Focus on the Family should leave the Super Bowl happy, if for no other reason than the amount of media attention that came to that ad. And as you'll recall in that ad, all that Pam Tebow did was say that she was grateful that she had been the mother of Tim and chosen life. That's all it said. It didn't say anything about abortion. It didn't call for the reversal of Roe v. Wade. It didn't call for any legislative or public kind of proposal that would amount to policy. It was just a statement of the affirmation of the gift of life. Focus on the Family sponsored that. I did not speak about it before the airing of that ad because I'm on the board of Focus on the Family, and I did not want to say anything that that might be used against the organization in light of the controversy over that ad. But I want to say on the other side of it that it is clear that if nothing else, the ad smoked out the pro-choice, pro-abortion side in a way that nothing to date ever has. Because what you had was spokespersons for the abortion industry and abortion activism who went out and said it is not right to suggest that a woman choosing life rather than abortion is a morally superior choice. If you really listen to what they were saying, the only way you could oppose this ad, the only way you could oppose its message, is if you genuinely believe that a choice to have a baby is in no way morally superior to a choice to have it terminated in the womb. That's a fascinating thing to have happen. And in terms of the take home from the Super Bowl and the entire controversy over the Focus on the Family ad, the most important thing to me is to understand that finally some people said what we have known they have believed, and that is that it isn't morally superior in any way to choose life rather than death. And I will let that statement simply speak for itself. There is a lot going on in the news that has to do with what I wrote my article about this morning at my website at albertmoeller.com, and there I wrote an article based upon the conversation we had on this program yesterday. The article is asking the question, where are the young men, in particular on college campuses? We talked yesterday about the fact that the gender imbalance on the American college and university campus has reached 60-40. That is 60% females and 40% males, and that's not just the reality that there are now more women coming. The reality is that there are literally fewer men going on to college. We talked about some of the reasons why. I published that article this morning, and we talked about it yesterday, and lo and behold, this morning's edition of USA Today has a major feature on the same issue. The headline is, Gender Gap in College Has Far-Reaching Consequences. A couple of interesting things about this article. Richard Whitmire, who is quoted in this article, the author of a book entitled Why Boys Fail, Saving Our Sons from an Educational System That's Leaving Them Behind. One of the things he points out is that boys used to catch up. That it used to be that in the lower grades, girls tested better than boys at higher levels of advancement. But over the process of the 12-year and now 13-year K through 12 structure, boys eventually caught up. And in some subject matter, it even exceeded girls. So you had in the high schools, some boys headed in one direction, girls headed in another direction, and outperforming each other in various parts of the curriculum. That's not happening now. And this kind of documentation is important for parents to know. One of the things he urges upon parents, let me just read it. He says, don't believe your teacher when they say boys start out slowly, but will catch up. That used to be true, but it's not now. Very, very interesting. And the reason it's not, he says, is because of changes in the federal guidelines for curriculum that made the first grades so intensely verbal in terms of the work, the subject matter, and the evaluation. And it turns out that girls at those younger ages have a distinct advantage over boys in terms of verbal skills, and they get behind. And because those particular skills propel themselves through the curriculum, the boys often stay behind. And I've got to say, there are an awful lot of men out there who are saying, we always stay behind when it comes to some verbal skills that seem to be easier caught and taught by females than males. Very, very interesting. He says this. Most girls adjusted nicely to the intensified verbal skills demanded in the early grades. Most boys didn't. We have to figure out a way to keep boys on track with reading and writing skills. Boys are failing because the world has gotten more verbal, and they haven't. Now, you think about one statement that rings true in an article like this, that one certainly holds true. Let me read you that sentence again. Boys are failing because the world has gotten more verbal, and they haven't. Well, this is a world in which words are important. And it is important that boys gain the skills of reading and writing, in particular reading in the early stages and then writing. Verbal communication is important. It will remain important. But we have to understand that it comes less naturally to boys, and we've got to come up with ways to encourage them. If parents, you're not helping your sons to discover that reading is fun, they're going to be in big trouble. As one particular expert I saw said just recently, you give me a child, and when he starts reading Shakespeare and laughs in the right parts, he's going to be fine. We're going to come back to talk about a very different dimension of education, the Planned Parenthood Federation, the international body, calling for comprehensive sex education for all kids, for your kids. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler program. It was Ed Barnes at Fox News that broke the story yesterday. And when I saw the story, I'll tell you, I was afraid that it was one of those, rather spurious news reports, perhaps, that might be based upon some kind of peripheral document that was uncovered that was made to be larger than it actually is in significance. The headline of the story was Planned Parenthood pushes intensive sex education for kids as young as 10. But to the credit of Fox News, not only is their report accurate, but they also provided a link to the full report so you could read it for yourself, and I did. And I have it before me right now, the full document by the International Planned Parenthood Federation, and it is everything that the news reports and some websites were saying that it is. In particular, it is addressed to all young people in the world ages 10 and above. By the way, it defines adolescence that way. It speaks specifically using a World Health Organization definition of young people as those from 10 to 24 years of age, adolescents 10 to 19 years of age, youth 15 to 24 years of age. So putting all that together, the International Planned Parenthood Federation decided to aim at the years 10 to 24. And that includes, of course, millions and millions of young people around the world. Now, a lot of what's in this report has to do with things in the developing countries related to economics, safe water, and all the rest. And, of course, that's of great interest, anyone who cares about young people. But that's not the main interest of the IPPF, the International Planned Parenthood Federation. Their main interest is getting comprehensive sex education to all young people. Now, let's define some terms here. What is comprehensive sex education? Comprehensive sex education differs from what you may have had in high school or middle school in sex education in this sense. It's not just about biology and reproduction. It's not just about how boys and girls are different and how bodies develop and mature. It's not just about how a baby is conceived and, what you would consider more or less the old talk called the birds and the bees. It's now about how people actually have sex, how different people have different sex, how sex can be made more pleasurable, and how you can have sex while avoiding a baby or a sexually transmitted disease. Comprehensive sex education is ideologically driven by those who believe that it is wrong to say that young people in these ages should not have sex, and it is tremendously wrong, they argue, to act as if they are not having sex. From the report I read, sex and reproduction are central to our lives. This is a basic truth. Here is another. Young people are sexual beings. It should come as no surprise, therefore, that sexuality education promotes individual well-being and the advancement of broader societal and public health goals. Comprehensive sexuality education is perhaps the single most important gift that parents can offer to their children and to adolescents everywhere as they approach the age at which they will begin to have sex. Now, just consider how much is loaded in that paragraph. This is an ideologically rich, ideologically potent paragraph. It begins by defining young people as sexual beings. Now, let me tell you, that is more than just a deft use of the language. That is an attempt to identify sexual rights for minors as young as 10 as a part of their integral rights as human beings. They are sexual beings. Now, this does not mean what you might just assume that it means, in that they're going into puberty, they're going into the process of becoming reproductively possible. they're going towards sexual and physical maturation. No, that is not what it's talking about. When it says they are sexual beings, it is very clearly saying that they have a right to the expression of their sexuality. It should come as no surprise, this report says, that sexuality education, because these are sexual beings, promotes individual well-being and the advancement of broader societal and public health goals. Now, that's really interesting, too, because one of the issues in this comprehensive sex education is breaking down all discrimination against persons on the basis of gender or sexual orientation or marital status. So you see the ideology that's explicit in that? Then they end it by saying that comprehensive sexuality education is perhaps the single most important gift that parents can offer to their children. Now, if you saw that sentence just bare, just alone, outside the context of this report, you might be inclined to agree with it. Not that it would be the single most important gift, but that it would be an important gift to educate our children concerning all things related to sex and sexuality and sexual morality and marriage. That is what I'm suggesting Christian parents must do, should do, are called to do, have the responsibility to do, according, especially as I'm speaking here to Christian parents, according to a biblical understanding of morality, an understanding of sex and sexuality as a part of God's gift to his creatures within the context of a very clear biblical pattern that authorizes sexual activity only within the context of heterosexual marriage, period. But that's not what they're saying. They're saying, and I want you to hear this sentence again, comprehensive sexuality education is perhaps the single most important gift that parents can offer to their children, and then they say, and to adolescents everywhere as they approach the age at which they will begin to have sex. Now, that sentence is breathtaking. It embeds so much in terms of the ideology of those who believe that young people should be having sex. It doesn't say might even be having sex. It says they will begin to have sex. Remember, they're talking about children as young as 10. And then it says that this is what parents should give their children as a gift, and the next words are, and to adolescents everywhere. Now, that's where you got to realize this is where the Planned Parenthood Federation believes that it comes in. And that public school educators come in, and that authorized government agents come in, because you, as the parents of your children, can't ensure that adolescents everywhere in the world have this kind of comprehensive sexuality education, so somebody's going to have to do it, and you just wonder and guess who that somebody is. It's either going to be a government agent through the schools or some other means, or it's going to be a non-governmental organization such as the International Planned Parenthood Federation. There's a great deal more in this report. Let me read to you this sentence having to do with faith, religion, and sexuality. That's the heading on the page. It says this, young people's sexuality is still contentious for many religious institutions. Just think about that. In other words, some people have a problem with thinking about adolescents having sex. Imagine that. Young people's sexuality is still contentious for many religious groups. Fundamentalist and other religious groups, the Catholic Church and madrasas or Islamic schools, for example, have imposed tremendous barriers that prevent young people, particularly, from obtaining information and services related to sex and reproduction. Currently, many religious teachings deny the pleasurable and positive aspects of sex, and limited guidelines for sexual education often focus on abstinence before marriage, parenthesis, although evidence shows this strategy has been ineffective in many settings, end quote. The reality is, the report says, young people are sexual beings, and many of them are religious as well. There is a need for pragmatism, they say, to address life as it is and not as it might be in an ideal world, end quote. Now, folks, when it says that many religious teachings deny the pleasurable and positive aspects of sex, it's talking about you telling your children that they ought not to have sex before marriage, and what they want you to do is to tell them how they can maximize the pleasure of having sex before marriage, without marriage, at any point at which they themselves declare themselves ready for sex. Parents, join the conversation. All of you out there who have a concern about this, let's think about it. What is our response in terms of a proper sex education? And what do we say to this? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This report is a blockbuster. There is so much in it. It's hard sometimes to know where to start on something like this. I was talking about the section on faith, religion, and sexuality. It continues. Listen to this paragraph. Every religion or faith must find a way of explaining and providing guidance on issues of sex and sexual relationships among young people, which supports rather than denies their experiences and needs. Okay, folks, that's one of those breathtaking sentences. It's saying that your church must, your denomination, your faith must find a way to explain and provide guidance on sex and sexual relationships among young people, and listen to these words, which supports rather than denies their experiences and needs. In other words, they're going to have sex, deal with it. Tell them how to do it in a safe way. Encourage them to do it in such a way that maximizes pleasure. Go ahead and just understand that young people, children, adolescents, young adults between the ages of 10 and 24 are going to have sex. And find a way to accommodate yourself to it. By highlighting strong values, the report says, in faith and religions and overcoming stigma and stereotypes that religious conventions perpetuate, communities and leaders can help improve young people's access to sexual and reproductive health information and services, and so improve their health and well-being. Fascinating. By highlighting strong values in faiths and religions, overcoming stigma and stereotypes that religious conventions perpetuate. You understand, that's just overthrowing biblical morality. Those words, overcoming stigma and stereotypes that religious conventions perpetuate. You know, stigma such as you should not be having sex. It's wrong if you do have sex. Stigma such as you must retain marriage as the arena for the legitimate expression of sexuality. Anything outside of marriage is wrong. Oh, use that word wrong. That stigmatizes. This has, of course, to do not only with heterosexual sexual activity, but homosexual sexual activity, the whole range of what's out there. This, they say, improves young people's health and well-being. Let me just point out that this is a very limited understanding of health and well-being. From a Christian perspective, it entirely ignores their souls. It entirely ignores their character, their selves, who they are, and the powerful impact that sexual activity, and for that matter, comprehensive sex education has on them. Now, here's their action plan. So just so you know, there's an action plan here. This is not just some kind of philosophical document indicating the doctrine of the International Planned Parenthood Federation. There's an action plan. Here's the second point. Make comprehensive sexuality education mandatory in school and invest in multi-sectoral sexuality education programs to reach out-of-school youth. I got to tell you, you got to wonder about some of this language. I'd never seen the phrase multi-sectoral before, but it obviously refers to using means other than the schools to reach children who aren't in school. But you'll notice the must here. Make comprehensive sexuality education mandatory. Here's another action plan point. Increase the number of entry points to sexual and reproductive health programs by implementing an intersectoral approach. Now, so we had multi-sectoral sexuality education. Now we have intersectoral approaches. You can see where this is going. This is to reach all young people and children ages 10 to 24, and that includes yours. It is interesting just to consider the impact of something like this. By the way, and just in case you weren't scared enough, in the report there is documentation of all these international agreements to which many nations, and perhaps even our own nation, have become a signatory, indicating where young people have rights that are supposedly given them in the international arena. International arenas such as an agreement such as the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Fourth World Conference on Women Platform for Action in 1995, The International Conference on Population and Development Program of Action 1994, the International Conference on Population and Development Program of Action 94, and the Yogyakarta Principles adopted 2006. And many of you are out there going, what in the world is that? You never heard about that from Congress? Well, folks, this is the arena of governmental and non-governmental organizations out there in the global legisphere that is coming up with all of these kinds of agreements about not only kids out there somewhere in the developing world, but your kids as well. Mandatory comprehensive sex education. Those are words that ought to send a chill down every parent's spine. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about the International Planned Parenthood Federation's new report, Stand and Deliver, Sex, Health, and Young People in the 21st Century. It's as bad as I heard it was in the news. And I followed the link. I have the report in hand. It's an easy-to-understand internationalese, just in terms of the bureaucratic language that is used here. Once you get through a multi-sectoral and intersectoral language, you understand exactly what they're aiming at. They're aiming at mandatory sex education for your children and young people ages 10 to 24 worldwide that would include not only the kind of biology, reproduction that the old birds and the bees talk had, but comprehensive sex education that would break down and get over the religious constrictions and hang-ups that many parents have concerning their children having sex. Let's go to the phones. Calling from Hart Spring, Arkansas is Margel. Go ahead, Margel.
Hi. I was just going to say, well, first I would try to fight against the liberal agenda, tooth and nail, of course, so that such laws would never be enforced, you know. But to say if it does, because you got liberalism in the White House, you know, you just be, and the word must come across. I'm Jewish Orthodox, so I'd just be frank about it. Yeah, I'll teach my kids, which I do, how the world acts. There's, you know, homosexual activity in the world and all this and all that. And you'd just say bluntly, yeah, that's in the world, and this is what, you know, outsiders do. But we who want to be holy cannot ever do this, and we have to. You know, like a man must always go to the opposite gender and vice versa. So any thing other than that is just strictly forbidden, and it must only be in the confines of marriage.
Margel, thank you so much for your call. Let me say, first of all, I appreciate the fact that you have thought through how you and your wife are actually going to teach your children. And I want to affirm what you already know, and that is that according to the scriptures, you are the designated teachers for your children. And by the way, it's not just true about sex education, it's true about everything. And we as parents may have others who partner with us in that educational project, but it is we who give an answer for our own children, not others. It is we who are the parents and bear that non-negotiable and non-delegatable association. We can't just transfer the franchise to someone else. But I like the way you made a distinction between talking to your children about what happens in the world versus what your expectations are for them. And I think that's a kind of honest conversation that probably does mark where Christian parents and parents who hold to a biblical morality are going to have to talk about things that they didn't have to talk about in previous generations. And as Margel was saying, Margel, there are some issues in which you're going to have to say some people do these things, and these things are done, but you need to know about them so that you'll understand why we don't do those things. And let me just point out that that is the Bible's way of dealing with this. The Bible is very explicit about what the nots are in the thou shalt nots. It's very clear and graphic even at an appropriate level so that we do not misunderstand exactly what the Bible's talking about, whether it's a prohibition on incest or bestiality or adultery or same-sex sexual activity. It's all explicitly identified in Scripture. And Scripture is very clear in valorizing and authorizing sex only in one context, and that is monogamous, faithful, heterosexual marriage. The very fact that we have to use the words heterosexual marriage together indicates something of the tragic confusion of our day. But these days, we've got to make that clear. It's not just a marriage document, because we now have jurisdictions that will offer a marriage document that does not amount to a marriage that we can recognize. It is rather heterosexual marriage that admits a biblical definition and fits that biblical definition of marriage. That's what's absolutely crucial. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, from day to day on this program, there are things I think we will end up talking about. But in many given days, what happens is that something like this hits. And I've got to decide, is it important enough that we kind of shift these issues that we were going to talk about to a later time and take this on? I feel like this one was, and I want to tell you why. It's because when I saw this treated in the press, and by the way, I want to give thanks to many of you who sent links to me concerning this report and this news story, because as I check my Twitter feed and my email, it's clear many of you were onto this and concerned about this, and thank you for sending the link. I do want to offer some guidelines just to help us to think through how Christian parents ought to think about a proper sex education. It will not be what the world defines as comprehensive sex education. It's going to be a distinctively Christian, distinctively biblical sex education that's going to really teach children what it means that God made them sexual beings, because we're not going to abstract that from the fact that God made them in His image for His glory. We're going to make very clear that everything God gave His human creatures was given for a purpose that He gets to define as creator. And He has defined that sexual gift within marriage. And He has given us that in order that the couple will be drawn together and they would also enjoy the process of becoming a family and receiving children and seeing themselves become fruitful and multiply as they're faithful. It is a biblical worldview that valorizes sex, authorizes sex, blesses sex in a very clear and positive way, but in only one context, and that is biblical marriage. Outside of that, every form of sexual expression is wrong. That, by the way, makes for the simplicity of the Christian and biblical understanding of human sexuality. You don't have to have a PhD in sexual education to get it. It's simple. Our Creator's not playing a game with us. He didn't give us a maze or a puzzle about sexual principles. He said, look, here is where sex belongs. Marriage. Adam and Eve were naked in the garden, and they were unashamed. As a matter of fact, the Scripture is very clear that sex was given to human beings for pleasure. Yes, absolutely, but also for procreation. And the Bible actually has a lot more to say about procreation than pleasure, which is reversing the logic of the world around us now. There is also out there a great deal of material that parents are going to have to look at and realize this is sex education that isn't advertised as sex education. That includes primetime television. That includes advertising. That includes the books your children may be reading. Sex education is more a part of the air we breathe than many of us like to think. You can't take your child into the mall without them getting a sex education. You can't take them to the beach without them getting quite a sex education. You can't take them out in public without sexual messages being addressed to them and going before their eyes and into their ears. That's why Christian parents can't just have one talk. It's not just a birds and the bees talk. It's teaching our children what is good and righteous for them and what we do expect of them at every stage of development, not just starting at 10, and not just ending when they're no longer adolescents. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Let's go straight to State College, Pennsylvania. Lynn's listening on WTLR. Go ahead, Lynn.
Yes, hello, Dr. Miller. Thank you so much for making us aware of these things. I just had a question. I've raised three children, and they love the Lord, and my son just got married last August, and I have two daughters who have boyfriends for the first time, and I feel like we're doing fine as a family because my son is actually loaning me John Piper's book, Sex and the Supremacy of Christ, and you know, if you look at sex from the way the Lord has set it up, it's beautiful, as you say. And the thing I'm most concerned about, though, is all those children out in the world who aren't getting the parental guidance and who aren't being protected. Is there anything we as Christian families can do to protect those children and help them somehow?
Well, you know, I would say, Lynn, the most important thing we can do is be active in every arena where the Lord has put us, to be agents of righteousness and of light, where we can have an influence with others. I would say, first of all, you're exactly right to begin with your own family. And when you are concerned with your own family, then you realize, okay, where my children are educated and where they go, that's in the proximity of where I can have influence. And yet, beyond that, you can also have influence as you have a protective instinct for other families, understanding that, that parental rights are a matter of grave concern here, but also realizing that many children are actually going to receive whatever sex education they receive in the public schools. That's where being active in terms of the public school boards is very important. And that's where watching the legislation and letting your elected representatives know what you expect. This kind of thing is not going to get through in the United States being forced down by an NGO. But what you got to watch is where our own government basically becomes a signatory to these documents, and where sometimes this kind of document becomes a backgrounder that shifts the discussion in the wrong direction, where we have our own regulatory agencies or our governmental agencies like the Department of Education that ends up authorizing funding for the public schools and says, if you're going to get the funding, you have to do this. And by the way, the shift from an abstinence-based sex education that was the dominant philosophy and policy of the Bush administration to something else is what we're going to have to watch very closely with this new administration and see where it goes. This is the kind of document that comes as a wake-up call that there are big policy issues out there, and if we're not involved and if we're just simply on the sidelines, this kind of logic is going to pertain. I wish we could get to other callers. We have a great call coming in saying worried about government control of family education centers in the public schools. Well, then again, just understand where the government's money goes, where the government's funding ends up. It's under government control, and all these things are going to be in play if the government actually puts them in play. So being vigilant and watchful is very important. Parents, remember, it starts with us. You are the primary sex educators of your children. Remember that. Do it well. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.